All right, the race to December 18th. Early signing period. Nebraska with a busy weekend in recruiting. They've gone hard in the paint with junior college players, with defensive players, fingers crossed on wide receivers. So more recruiting activity than playing activity. But that's been the case now for three straight years. Season is over, 5-7. Kind of as we've done all week long, all of our weekly guests, we're kind of getting a wrap up on the season. So next up and from the on-deck circle to the batter's box is Brian Christopherson of Husker 24/7. BC, good Friday morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I'm like the guy who moves that on. Who was the guy who got in trouble for, like, basically the on-deck circles behind the plate and they got mad at him last season? Who was that?
Oh, gosh. I know who you're talking about. I thought you were going to go the former Wichita State pitcher that beaned that guy in the on-deck circle.
Oh, man. No. I'm not.
Maybe I just jumped the shark there.
No. But I know what you're talking about. I don't want to go that dark. But yeah, I'm the guy who gets a little too close to the plate with my on deck circle.
Hey, where do you think? And maybe there wasn't. But was there a turning point in this season where Nebraska had some traction, then lost it and couldn't get it back?
You could probably point to a few. I mean, I feel like the Colorado game set a bad tone in September once again, where it's sort of this vibe like, oh man, they still can't finish, you know, and it starts to get in their heads a little bit. But I think probably my first answer to that question might actually be the Indiana game, when they're up, what was it, 14-3 or something like that, and you know, they had a lead and they're driving on about the 35-yard line and they have the shovel pass where if you get a block it probably goes big. And then Federal gets hit, you fumble, they run it back 65 yards. It's like a 10-14-point swing. And I think when you look at where this program is at right now, that represented a two-week span of just missed opportunities against teams they could have beat with Indiana and Purdue. And we'd be talking a lot differently about things right now if you win even one of those games, but especially if you win both of those games. So. I think that play right there kind of stands out to me because I felt like that turned that game, and then it kept kind of a downward spiral going after the Minnesota debacle all the way up until the last couple weeks of the season where they finally found some togetherness, which they all talked about, which was kind of strange that it took so long.
I've tried to put my finger on this because there's the phrase the front runner. And then there's the chip on the shoulder, or we can take a deep breath. Some of the expectations are off. Nebraska looks like they've struggled as a front runner. But when things are okay, that's out of our reach, things start to click, whether it be you start 0-6 last year or, you know, you get to the Wisconsin game when it seemed like coming off of Purdue, you're supposed to be down in the dauber, and there was better football the last 3 weeks. Do you feel that way at all?
Yeah, it has been kind of an unfortunate deal where whenever there's been expectations, it's kind of grounded them. And then when they don't have those at all, when everybody's kind of like, well, I guess we'll watch the game, but don't expect much, then they found a little something. And even that Wisconsin game, I mean, though it ended up being a, 16-point deficit or whatever it was, it felt like they were sort of going toe-to-toe with them moving the football in that game and obviously couldn't finish drives. But they looked different. I mean, and then Maryland's just a bad team, but there was an energy from the get-go that they had, which we didn't see previously in the year. And I felt like it was even clear in that Iowa game that they were really together and playing for each other. And something this staff talked about clicked with them for whatever reason, and it was, I think a lot of it had to do with, hey, you only get so much time with this group of guys. Every year is a different year, and you're about to say goodbye to these guys. Enjoy being around them. Try to lengthen that experience by a month if you can, and just enjoy the game. You know, it doesn't have to be a thing where it's stressful and it shouldn't be difficult to go out there and play. It should be fun, and they seem to start having that at the end of the year. Which is, I don't know. It's hard to get your head around because it's something that needs to be there from the get-go. But I don't know if they kind of believe their press clippings a bit, which I always get a kick out of that phrase, the press clippings. I don't think anyone cuts them out anymore. But believe what they're reading on their iPhones or whatever. But they definitely were not they weren't ready from the gun, and that's something that has to be addressed.
I think they were reading their screenshots.
That's right. Yeah. That's what I was looking.
Yeah, 24 games as a Power 5 head coach. Did we learn anything differently about Scott Frost in 2019?
I think the whole staff has been humbled a bit in the way that happens when, you know, it doesn't go quite as planned and you get an up close look at this league. And I think you're seeing that they realize, hey, to have a shot in the Big Ten, you got to have some serious dudes in the trenches and some ballers. And, you know, all the nice teams and all the fancy things you can drop, that's nice. But you have to be able to go in there and swap paint with Wisconsin and Iowa types and hold your own. And I do think they're getting better in that area. I mean, if there's one thing of promise that I saw was I felt like when you got into the offensive and defensive line play, they were holding their own much better this year against Iowa, I felt, than last year. Against Wisconsin, at least on the offensive line side, Nebraska, I thought, played really well in that game, maybe their best game of the season. And so that's encouraging. The fact that you could look at the offensive line and make the case right now that they could be the strength of this team in 2020, mm-hmm. now that some of the young guys like Jurgens have that under their belt. And obviously, if Ben Hart comes along, that's exciting. Depth could be better. That's something to hang your hat on. And I think, I guess to your question, I think this staff is fully jumped in the pool on that. Not that they didn't know that you had to be good on the trenches, but I think you see when you're up close in this league, man, everybody is just giant, and you've got to match that.
Brian Christopherson from Husker 24/7 joining us. 6-1 possession games this year. Nebraska goes 2-4. It was kind of along the same lines last year. Do you recognize a common theme, and do you have a solution for how Nebraska can win those one possession games, flip a 4-2 to 5-1 to even 6-0 in the future?
The solution to me comes in recruiting, and it's finding that guy or couple of guys who are the difference of two or three plays in a game. And I don't want to overly simplify it, but you look at that Iowa game. Iowa has A.J. Epineza, Nebraska doesn't. Mm-hmm. Iowa has a guy who has 14 tackles, 4.5 TFLs, and 2 sacks in that game. Nebraska doesn't. And to me, that's the difference maybe between, you know, losing a game by 3 or 4 points and winning a game by 3 or 4 points. When you look back at UCF, which has become old news around here, but still it's a good example. Their second year there, with Shaquem Griffin, he was the type of player by himself who could make 4 or 5 plays in a game that just turned the thing on its ear. And, you know, you're playing Memphis in the conference title game, or you're playing Auburn in the bowl game. That one guy, I don't know that UCF wins either of those games without that single mm-hmm. individual. And so there's got to be somebody that is found, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that is that special difference maker that the other team has to account for and put a lot of eyeballs on. It opens up things for other guys. And he's just got to be a different kind of player, a different breed. And I don't know if he's on the roster yet or not. And so that's where, you know, they might need to hit lightning in a bottle a little bit with a JUCO kid who's just special, and he's that guy who gives you a foundation while some other guys grow around him. And then on offense, you got to find that guy at receiver too. And maybe that's an Omar Manning who's 6'4", 225, and is a security blanket for a QB, and he kills two birds with one stone. He helps you out at receiver, and he helps you out at quarterback all in the same sentence. So I think it's going to take 3 or 4 of those special guys and then to just kind of build around it to be the difference.
What player for 2020 not named Adrian Martinez needs to be like the magnet, where he has to be good in the off season and then add that in the season of 2020? the guy that has to, that you're going to be one to watch in the off season to see how he grows?
Oh, that's good. Good question. I'll say, you know, there's multiple answers here, but Deontay Williams was sorely missed by this team this year, I think. And we only saw him for basically a half a quarter. And that whole secondary was sort of being cobbled together after that injury. There just wasn't the depth. I think they're going to have better depth there, but I think Deontay Williams is going to be the tone setter. He's got kind of a magnetic personality, at least with his teammates. He loves football, and it's just like what he sleeps, you know, and eats. And I think he being out there, if he can get out there and get healthy again, could be a big difference next year. So he'd be a guy on the defensive side that I would highlight. I'd like to see JoJo take on more of that because I think he's a ball hawk and a playmaker, and he's got one more year to do that. And I think he can be a leader. Still, he's probably a guy like that on the D-line. But it's going to take, I think, honestly, like, you need to have a group of like 10 to 12 of those guys where you feel like this is your nucleus of leaders, who everybody kind of respects, your unity council guy, so to speak, and they drive the bus. And it can't just be like two or three of them. It has to be like 12 of those guys, and guys have to feel a pressure to want to answer to them. They have to not want to disappoint those type of guys.
I absolutely agree with you on Deontay Williams. I mean, he's an alpha who people are attracted to and was ready for a big season, finally getting his opportunity to start, and then it ended so quickly with the injury. I'm very excited to see him get back on the field and what he can do. I think he'll be a guy that'll lead the charge and will be chomping at the bit to get out there for even spring ball.
Yeah, there's no question. He was making plays all off season, and I know that's off season talk, and we never know how that translates when you're lining up against Wisconsin or Ohio State. It doesn't mean anything necessarily, but within the realm of what they were doing over there, he was probably one of Nebraska's best two or three players all off season. And then that guy's gone from your roster a quarter into the year. That shakes up everything. Cam Taylor-Britt had to move to safety, and I think Markell Dismuke had to take on more of the communication issues than he was probably expecting, and it just threw everything for a loop right off the bat. So that's something that might be disregarded about why things went a little haywire at times, I think.
Great stuff, BC. Have a great championship weekend.
Yep, thanks a lot.
That's Brian Christopherson. Joins us every Friday here on a Football Friday Fiesta. When we get out of football season, we'll just call it Friday. I do want to mention, because this came up after we were off the air, it's the uncomfortable thing that I don't know how everybody else is handling at. They talk about it. No, you don't have a hot take. Two players, Andre Hunt and Katerian Lagrone, who were suspended immediately from the football program the week of the season. Word coming out yesterday from ESPN. By the way, now a question has to be, who leaked this story to ESPN? Because in a Title IX, it's confidential. But both of these former Nebraska football players are facing more than a two-year suspension from Nebraska following alleged sexual assault. Two-and-a-half-year suspension. They were not charged. It was in an ESPN report yesterday. The football program immediately acted. They removed them. The response by Scott Frost was swift. They were not on the team, but the timing was leads to questions wondering how 2019 unfolded. From this happened, this incident, as reported by ESPN with plenty of details. Again, the Title IX is supposed to be confidential. When I first saw it, I thought, oh, did local media, the two major newspapers, get scooped? Or did somebody give it to ESPN? Well, somebody gave it to ESPN. And the timing is, this incident, as reported by ESPN, happened. Remember the last Saturday before the season starts, Nebraska has a scrimmage or an open practice for the students. And this incident happened that night. Nebraska acted quickly, removing both of them from their program, or suspending them indefinitely. Andre Hunt was slated to be your number one wide receiver. Number one wide receiver. J.D. Spielman could have felt comfortable being the number two. Andre Hunt had made progress, was going to be your starter. And his actions led him to being removed from the football team. And it's now a university versus these two with their lawyers, football program, athletic department, out of their hands. But as you get the timing, and listen, people wanted to tell you immediately what happened. And you knew that it had to be a serious issue because this was never addressed, and no one felt comfortable to bring it up to Scott Frost to say, hey, is there a chance that Hunt and Legrone will be back? Not brought up. But with this, and on a completely different level, with the Deontay Williams injury, the Mo Washington situation, a not top-level quarterback performance, six different kickers. I mean, wouldn't you just like to know what other distractions, and we can all have a different definition of what kind of a distraction, what kind of other distractions went on during this season that made this season kind of a blah season with just no feel to it? Wouldn't you like to know what those other distractions were? Maybe someday they'll come out. Still waiting for the end of the year Scott Frost press conference where he just lets her rip and tells you what happened. Opens the curtain a little bit to tell you what happened in 2019, then closes the curtain to make sure that that doesn't happen in 2020. But I think somebody maybe needs to find out who leaked this report to ESPN on Andre Hunt and Katerian Legrone facing a 2.5-year suspension from Nebraska following this alleged sexual assault. Not charged, alleged sexual assault. It's all in an ESPN report on Outside the Lines, by the way. Jeremiah Searles to come in the next hour. Dirk Chatelain as well. Big basketball game downtown here in the Big O tomorrow. I'll give you my keys, how I think it'll unfold. Again, what would a Creighton win mean? What would a Nebraska win mean in that game? That and much more as we roll along on a Friday on 1620 The Zone.